Mahalia Jackson, and African-American, the Negro Spiritual, it was called, had this profound effect. That's one of the reasons why we use A Mighty Fortress by Mahalia Jackson. The other reason, of course, is that this was written by Martin Luther and the Reformation. And so this would have all been part of the heritage of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Here are the lines. Of course, you all know it very well, of A Mighty Fortress. So yesterday, we left Dietrich Bonhoeffer at age 29 in 1935. And we reviewed that year. We have him returning from London after Karl Barth tells him, "Your house is on fire," in a letter, a long letter, which ripped him up one side and down the other. And in fact, Karl Barth says, "If you were in person, I would have been a lot tougher on you." So Karl Barth says he is needed in Germany. And of course, after we've seen what happened in 1933, 34, now it's 35, and the Nazification of the church is well underway. And so he returns to serve in the capacity of director of a illegal seminary that is supported or is for the confessing church. Remember, we confess Christ. Of course, their confessional is much longer. That and confessional would be the creed of that church is much longer. But there's no Hitler in their confessional. They are committed to Christ and Christ only. We're going to move forward now. And for today, we're going to be doing 2 5-year periods. So there's only 2 slides. And I hope all of you were able to get a copy of the handout. I had some older ones. Might be 1 or 2 small differences, but that way you can make notes or follow as well as look at the slides. So our first period is going to be 1936. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer is now director of this seminary. It initially was on the Baltic Sea, but then it moves on into a little town called Finkenwald. I know somebody that went out there, talked to him to see if he could find it, and he didn't find it. There's really nothing there to see. It was the buildings, even if they still exist, don't really amount to much. Pomerania is what the region is, and it was part of Germany at the time, and now it's part of northern Poland. I got close to it, but decided not to drive over there since I already knew there wasn't much I was going to be able to see. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, this is a time of great devotion and learning. Bonhoeffer is emphasizing prayer and meditation, and almost to the point of monasticism, and Karl Barth's a little nervous with that. But and the seminarians are not real comfortable with it. Nevertheless, after the fact, all of them agreed that this was a profound period in their lives. So there's something to be said, although not the separatism. I was just reading about that, and Bonhoeffer, he would not say we should separate out, but there's something for spending time, quiet time, with God alone. Now, most of these seminarians are destined for conscription. Conscription was required, and there were no conscientious objectors in Nazi Germany. You didn't serve, you were executed. So it was a pretty easy decision, maybe. We already saw that Bonhoeffer himself was concerned about what he would do, especially after his, well, I wouldn't call him a pacifist, after his time with Jean Le Serre. So, and of course, he did not believe, he believed in country. He loved his country, but he did not think that what was coming, and he knew the war was coming, was just by any means. And so there was a great conflict in his decision here about what he would do if conscripted. But most of those seminarians were conscripted, and many of them, if not most, died in the war. If you fought for the Germans, your chances of survival were not great. And so, now, I mentioned that Eberhard Bethge, a real key person here, was one of those seminarians and became his best friend and his confession partner. So they would confess to each other. He spent his life as a Bonhoeffer scholar, and as a scholar, he was actually instrumental in preserving much of the material that we now have. So we have a lot of gratitude to Bethge. Now, I tend to, and we all tend to, immortalize our heroes. And Bonhoeffer is my hero, without a doubt. The two people that have, you know, that I have followed and studied over many years are C.S. Lewis and Bonhoeffer, and many, many others. But clearly, those are the two favorites for me. And when we immortalize fellow believers and heroes, we tend to take away all their warts. But what I always liked about Lewis was that he had lots of warts. Not to mention he drank a lot and he smoked a lot and other things. Bonhoeffer, Bethge shares with us that he did have periods of depression, in spite of the fact that his dedication to our Lord was great and solid and he was committed. He writes at one point from Tegel Prison, which we're going to come to in a little while, "I wonder why it is that we find some days so much more oppressive than others for no apparent reason. Is it growing pains or spiritual trial?" I think it's spiritual warfare. Once they are over, the world looks quite a different place again. So here's a picture. Oops, I always hate it when that happens. Say again?
You could try one of the, I think you bumped the one of the.
Yeah, I did. That's what I did.
There you go.
Finkelwald Seminary. Can you find Bonhoeffer?
This guy on the left?
Yeah, second row down on the left, far left. Okay. Well. Okay. Now, I indicated last time that this was a period where he was committed to the Sermon on the Mount, and he wrote his most influential book, which is The Cost of Discipleship. And we're going to read from that right now, starting with his teaching on grace. So will the first reader step forward and read into the mic.
All right. Cost of discipleship, grace. Cheap grace is the preaching of forgiveness without requiring repentance. Baptism without church discipline. You're on the second slide.
Thank you.
Communion without confession. Absolution without personal confession. Cheap grace is grace without discipleship. Grace without the cross. Grace without Jesus Christ, living and incarnate. Costly grace is the treasure hidden in the field. For the sake of it, a man will gladly go and sell all that he has. It is the pearl of great price, to buy which the merchant will sell all of his goods. It is the kingly rule of Christ, for whose sake a man will pluck out the eye which causes him to stumble. It is the call of Jesus Christ, at which the disciple leaves his nets and follows him. Costly grace is the gospel which must be sought again and again, the gift which must be asked for, the door at which a man must knock. Such grace is costly because it calls us to follow, and it is grace because it calls us to follow Jesus Christ.
Wow. Continuing on grace.
It is costly because it costs a man his life, and it is grace because it gives a man the only true life. It is costly because it condemns sin, and grace because it justifies the sinner. Above all, it is costly because it cost God the life of his Son. ye were bought at a price. And what has cost God much cannot be cheap for us. Above all, it is grace, because God did not reckon his Son too dear a price to pay for our life, but delivered him up for us. Costly grace is the incarnation of God. Costly grace is the sanctuary of God. It has to be protected from the world and not thrown to the dogs. It is therefore the living word, the word of God, which he speaks as it pleases him. Costly grace confronts us as a gracious call to follow Jesus. It comes as a word of forgiveness to the broken spirit and to the contrite heart. Grace is costly because it compels a man to submit to the yoke of Christ and follow him. It is grace because Jesus says, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light."
Wow. Continuing on with a selection from the Beatitudes from The Cost of Discipleship.
Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Who is pure in heart? Only those who have surrendered their hearts completely to Jesus, that he may reign in them alone. Only those whose hearts are undefiled by their own evil and by their own virtues too. The pure in heart have a childlike simplicity like Adam before the fall, innocent alike of good and evil. Their hearts are not ruled by their conscience, but by the will of Jesus. If men renounce their own good, if in penitence they have renounced their own hearts, if they rely solely upon Jesus, then his word purifies their hearts. Purity of heart is here contrasted with all of outward purity, even the purity of high intentions. The pure heart is pure alike of good and evil. It belongs exclusively to Christ and looks only to him who goes on before. Only they will see God. For in this life, who in this life have looked solely unto Jesus Christ, the Son of God? For them, their hearts are free from all defiling fantasies and are not distracted by conflicting desires and intentions. They are wholly absorbed by the contemplation of God. They shall see God, whose hearts have become a reflection of the image of Jesus Christ.
The cost of discipleship. To obey is to believe. To believe is to obey. That is the argument, the theological position of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Back to our timeline.
Do you know, did he write in English or German?
German.
He wrote in German?
Yes. And in German, the cost of discipleship is just called discipleship. But of course, the book clearly talks about the cost of discipleship. We're back to our timeline. While Dietrich Bonhoeffer's at Finkelwald, Hitler reoccupies the Rhineland in violation of the Versailles Treaty. There's no real opposition, and he becomes a hero to many German people who chafed under the treaty. Hitler hosts the Berlin Olympics to showcase his new Volk. He does not want black athletes there, but the doesn't have any choice. The Olympics require him to. And much to his chagrin, one of the great heroes of 1936 is Jesse Owens, who wins 4 gold medals and sets a long jump record that lasts for 25 years. Yay for Jesse. Hitler forms the Hitler Youth, and their pledge is, "Hitler, we belong to you." All over the age of 10 must join and must swear that oath. Many in the German army will come from these ranks. And in the German culture, an oath is sacred, honor. And so there he is having them do these oaths, getting their allegiance so that no matter what he does, they would have to violate their own pledges, their own oaths in order to oppose him. He forms the Axis Alliance with Italy and later Japan. Moving on to 1937, in September, the Gestapo shuts down the seminary in Finkelwald, but Dietrich Bonhoeffer basically goes underground, places the seminarians at a bunch of churches, goes around and teaches them anyhow. at risk to his life. Earlier that year in July, Martin Niemöller, who is also an amazing study, who was a decorated naval officer, submarine captain, and one of the founders of the Confessing Church, is arrested and sentenced to prison for his activities. He is to spend the next 8 years in captivity and still survives the war. He is credited with this saying that many of you will recognize. Could someone read that?
First, they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I am not a socialist. And then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. And then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me.
Dietrich Bonhoeffer continues to teach underground. The so-called German church institutes the pastor's oath, required of all pastors. Remember, pastors are licensed by the state, supported by the state. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, of course, refuses the oath and is disappointed that many in the Confessing Church choose to do this oath. But anyone who refused to take the oath was dismissed, and so Dietrich Bonhoeffer is banned from the church and actually banned from Berlin. German Lutherans for the most part now would take the oath, but many in the Confessing Church did as well. Now, I don't think I've handed this out. I think I pulled it because I find it so offensive. I don't want it read aloud. But you can see what it is that all pastors were required to swear. Not an allegiance to Jesus Christ, but you can see who. Right there. Adolf Hitler, the Führer. Dietrich Bonhoeffer now starts work on a book called Life Together, based on the experiences at Finkelwald for the seminary. And we do have a short passage from that.
Christianity means community through Jesus Christ. It means first that Christians need others because of Jesus Christ. It means second that Christians come together only through Jesus Christ. It means third that in Jesus Christ we have been chosen for eternity, accepted in time, and united for eternity.
Later in the year, in September, Sabina and her husband, who I mentioned is a Jew but a Christian, escaped to England with the help of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Of course, he has all these ecumenical contacts from all his time there, including Bishop George Bell of the Anglican Church, who I think is in the House of Lords. So he's a very influential person. The handwriting's on the wall for Jews. In fact, the handwriting was on the wall the day Hitler came into power, if you read Mein Kampf. Of course, Dietrich and Sabina, as twins, are extremely close to each other. So, let's move on to 1939. Oh, yes. In March, oops, who are we? 1939. No. We left out a key event many of you will be aware of. That is Kristallnacht, November 9th. An organized orgy of lethal vandalism is the way I have it referred to it. Synagogues are burned throughout the country. Jewish shops are attacked and the glass broken, thus the name Kristallnacht, or broken glass, broken crystal. Dietrich Bonhoeffer is away, hears of this, and his heart is broken. And he underlines in his Bible, and I've actually seen a picture of this that Eberhard Bethke showed in an interview, underlines Psalm 74:8 and notes the date, November 10th, 1938. They said in their hearts, "We will crush them completely." They burned every place where God was worshipped. Moving on now to 1939. Oh, one more thing about 1938. March, Austria is taken without a shot. The world grumbles, doesn't do anything. Hitler's on a roll. In September, the Munich Agreement is signed, which was pure capitulation. Gonna have to keep moving faster. Pure capitulation, giving Hitler part of Czechoslovakia in exchange for the promise that he won't take anything more. Just be a good boy and we'll let you have part of Czechoslovakia. It's a Sudetenland. And this appeasement simply whets Hitler's appetite. Moving on then to... it's also in this year that Dietrich Bonhoeffer formed some close ties with his brother-in-law, Hans Modany, which we're going to learn about a little bit more, who happens to be in the Abwehr, which is like, there's the CIA, FBI, it's like the CIA, it's the intelligence branch. And this is eventually going to lead to a role as a double agent by Dietrich Bonhoeffer. So now 1939, Dietrich Bonhoeffer is arrested and released. He's banned from writing, and with war clearly on the horizon, his friends work very hard to get him an appointment at Union Theological Seminary in order to teach there and to get him out of Germany, because he is a marked man. They get him a Sloan Fellowship. Years ago, I knew a bit about Sloan Fellowships. They're very prestigious. Award for study or postdoctoral or teaching. And so they get him one, and they get him out to Union, and they arrange teaching. They give him a beautiful office. I've actually, in the picture, you're going to see Union here in a second. I think I got a picture of Union here. It's a lovely place. And he'd already been there. And so he goes. And he's safe. And he's respected. And he has opportunities to write and to do the scholarly work that he's so good at. But it doesn't last. Just a few weeks, he's there. And the Holy Spirit is just drawing him. Could I get this read?
It's a little here.
Thank you.
Or if people want to volunteer to read. Mm-hmm.
I've had time to think and pray about my situation and that of my nation and God, and God's will for me clarified. I've come to the conclusion that I've made a mistake in coming to America. I will have no right to participate in the reconstruction of Christian life in Germany after the war, if I do not share the trials of this time with my people. Christians in Germany will face the terrible alternative of either willing the defeat of their nation in order that Christian civilization may survive, or willing the victory of their nation and thereby destroying our civilization. I know which of these alternatives I must choose, but I cannot make the choice in security. Dietrich.
Niebuhr is a noted theologian who played a key role in getting the appointment and getting him safe. This is amazing. He leaves the safety of New York City and goes back to Germany with war right on the horizon. And in fact, I've read that it was the last ship that he took back to be with his people so that he could be a pastor to those that were about to go through the horror, the eruption of evil of World War II. 1939, we see that, he goes ahead and invade the rest of Czechoslovakia in violation of the Munich Agreement. That didn't last very long. And now, finally, Chamberlain, who has been the master of appeasement, is forced into the corner and says, okay, you cross that line, one more line, and it's war. We're going to do an agreement with Poland. And that agreement is that if you take Poland, we go to war. And he invades Poland. And on September 3rd, World War II begins. Britain declares war against Germany. Now, it was pretty much just verbal because they weren't ready to do anything. And so the idea that they were going to protect Poland was pretty much just, well, yeah, maybe. What with what? How? By now, after all of this appeasement, Hitler has perfected his war machine. He has been manufacturing airplanes, tanks, trucks. And his initial stuff wasn't that good, but his stuff now is good, and his soldiers are well-trained. His army is powerful, and he just marches in, and he perfects what's called the Blitzkrieg. And Poland is taken with a Blitzkrieg, and so is Denmark, Norway, Netherlands, Belgium, Luxembourg, and he marches right on into France and right on into Paris. And so he is basically expanded enormously. Now, the whole purpose of this is land for the master race. He wants land. And so when he starts doing this, he doesn't want the people, only as slaves, so long as they can work. So the SS and others, they go right behind the army and start murdering not only Jews, but Poles, and they just, it's just wanton murder. The army is aghast. This is, many of them are saying, this doesn't fit any kind of just war, any kind of understanding of humanity. But Hitler has his followers, and so as he does this, he is just entered a new level of evil. And how can you not believe that Satan is alive and well when you examine the pictures and the documentation that we now have of what was going on? Now, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, because of his contacts with his brother-in-law, Hans von Danani, actually becomes a member of the Abwehr. And Canaris is also there, a believer, and Canaris is in control, and there is a resistance element that is working within the Abwehr to get rid of Hitler. They know what's going on. They are also, in the process, trying to get the word out to the world about what's actually happening in Germany, because much of it is being closed and kept secret. And so his role becomes that, because he has so many ecumenical contacts, supposedly he's going out and getting information for the Abwehr, but in fact he's taking information out. So he's actually what you'll call a double agent at this point. During this time, he stays at a Benedictine monastery, because remember, he's still kind of a marked man, and it's pretty amazing that he's able to do this. But and that's where he begins his book, Ethics, which was never finished, was pieced together after the war by Eberhard Bethge. So we're entering our last 5 years now, 1941 to 1945. Dietrich Bonhoeffer now is traveling extensively for the Abwehr to gather intelligence. Well, he's a double agent. But he's passing all this information over to the resistance and the Allies. Things are getting worse. Hitler institutes the Yellow Star. All Jews. And that's not practicing Jews or people of the Jewish faith. That's people that have any small amount of Jewish blood in their ancestry must wear yellow stars. So they're identified. Of course, they're already can't have government jobs. They can't serve in any posts. Their citizenship is essentially gone. But the Yellow Star is instituted. In 1941, he also starts an operation known as Barbarossa, which is an attack on Russia. Russia had formed an agreement. They kind of split Poland. Well, that didn't last very long either. Hitler is expanding. And at the end of 1941, we all know what happened on December 7th. The United States is attacked. And Hitler has long hated the United States for its Lend-Lease program, which was one of the most amazing deceptions. You know, we're not really supporting them. We're just lending them all these equipment and tanks and airplanes. So we're just lending them. And Roosevelt came up with this idea. And so Hitler said, what is Lend-Lease? The Americans are supplying our enemy, Britain. And so with the attack, of course, they were allies with Japan. Hitler declares war on the United States. And he begins the final solution with the gassing. They've now perfected the gassing at the concentration camps. 1942, he continues his role as a double agent with his personal relationship with Bishop Bell from the time in London as a pastor. He passes information to provide some assurance to the Allies that if the resistance is able to assassinate Hitler, that Britain will help the resistance to come to terms to end the war so that an interim government can restore order. So there is a major resistance going on in the leadership, and they want the Allies, particularly Churchill and Roosevelt, to assure them if they can assassinate Hitler that we will cooperate with them to kind of keep things in order so that things won't completely fall apart, because otherwise the followers of Hitler are going to fill the vacuum. And Anthony Eden turns them down in a letter that is very sad and says nope. And of course Churchill and Roosevelt have set their goal now after all the devastation for the total surrender of Germany. Now an amazing thing happens in 1942. Dietrich Bonhoeffer falls in love. Now, he had had an earlier love and a long relationship with another friend, but because of his role and serving, he felt that he must end that. But now he's 37 years old, and there's this 18-year-old that he's known since he was 13, but there was nothing wrong in the relationship, but he sees her now, and suddenly she's grown up, and she's beautiful, and she's smart. She eventually gets a degree in mathematics, and the spark occurs. Who could explain love? But it's love, and it's mutual. And initially, there's some real problems with her mother. That's real clear about having a relationship with this old guy, and certainly not this marked man. And so at one point they agree not to correspond and not to have any relationship for 6 months, but that doesn't actually work. And things get worse, and they correspond, they meet, and they're in love. What can you say? Brilliant, beautiful woman, Marie von Wedemeyer. There's a collection of love letters from prison. Could someone read this letter from 1942?
Letters from 1942. We have been silent witnesses of evil deeds. We have been drenched by many storms. We have learned the art of equivocation and pretense. Experience has made us suspicious of others and kept us from being truthful and open. Are we still of any use? We have for once learned to see the great events of world history from below, from the perspective of the outcasts, the suspects, the maltreated, the powerless, the oppressed, the reviled. In short, from the perspective of those who suffer. Mere waiting and looking on is not Christian behavior. Christians are called to compassion and action.
During this time, Dietrich Bonhoeffer is actually staying at his parents' home in Berlin. I visited that home in May of this year and got to go in. It was an incredible experience, and went right through that gate there with my grandson, who just graduated from Multnomah and has just taken an internship in studying theology and music in Maui. So my back has got to get better because I want to go to Maui so bad and see my grandson there. And he's the one that traveled with me. He and I drove 2,500 miles, 8 countries in May. And right the day he graduated, one of the wonderful experiences I had. There is his study. Those are pictures I actually took standing there and some of his collection of books. That's where he would have been working on ethics and writing other things. It was very emotional for me, very moving to stand there. And so we're moving on to our last 2 years here, 1943. In January, Dietrich Bonhoeffer and Maria von Wedemeyer announced their engagement, and I've already told you that was real well accepted, but I think soon Maria's mother came to realize that this love was real and supported this. The Gestapo discover records that show Bonhoeffer was involved in a scheme. The Gestapo doesn't really like the Abwehr. They're on their back, and they start going through their records and their financial records. And what they discover is that it was originally 7 Jews. I think it turned out to be more like 14 or 17 Jews, that Dietrich Bonhoeffer and Hans von Danani and Canaris said were agents in order to get them out of the country to save their lives. They were marked as Jews. And so they were saving Jews. But there was enough financial records and information that the Gestapo was able to say, uh-oh, this guy is not really with the Nazis here. So on April 5th, while at the home of Danani, Dietrich Bonhoeffer receives a call that 2 Gestapo agents want to talk with him. Well, 2 Gestapo agents want to talk with you. This is, you know what's going to happen. And so he knows that this is the beginning of the end. And he even states that. He accepts his fate, and they arrest him, and they take him to Tegel Prison. Tegel Prison, we drove over to Tegel Prison, my grandson and I, is actually only about a 10-minute drive. It's pretty close by the Bonhoeffer home. And it's not one of the Gestapo prisons. Remember, he's still a well-connected person. His father is one of the most distinguished psychiatrists. The family has connections. He is a well-known person in terms of his academic work. And so they don't throw him initially into the Gestapo prison. They put him into Tegel prison. And it's not a concentration camp, and it's not a Gestapo, but it is not a nice place. Dietrich Bonhoeffer finds his blanket so dirty that initially he does not use it. It's just so gross, the blanket. He is allowed visitors, and his parents come. He knows now that the Gestapo is going through records and everything, all of his writings. I mean, he's clearly going to be executed. And so he considers suicide. And not because of guilt and not because of fear, although I can't imagine the fear that you would have under those conditions, but because, and this happened to many in the resistance, because he knows too much. And he knows the torture can get that out of him. So, and he says, because I am already dead. So, there's a letter to Karl and Paula Bonhoeffer. He tries to put the best spin on what's going on. Could someone read this for me?
I want you to be quite sure that I am all right. Strangely enough, the discomforts that one generally associates with prison life, the physical hardships, hardly bother me at all. You can imagine that I am most particularly anxious about my fiancé at this moment. It is a great deal for her to bear. Here in the prison yard, there is a thrush that sings beautifully in the morning. Yours, Dietrich. And another one. One of my predecessors here has scribbled over the cell door, in 100 years, it will all be over. I am reading the Bible straight through from cover to cover, and I have just got as far as Job, which I am particularly fond of. I read the Psalms every day, as I have for years. I know them and love them more than any other book.
So, 1944. I saw recently in the paper last year on June 6th that most young people do not know what D-Day was, or June 6th. What a sad thing. Wonder what history they're studying. But the tide of war changes. The 6th Army of the Germans has devastating losses at Stalingrad. The Allies start serious carpet bombing of German cities. When I did this seminar in June, there was a man here who was from the Netherlands, and he remembers those days of continuous airplanes going across. His parents actually were heroes for supporting Jews, for hiding Jews. The issue of carpet bombing of cities is a really tough one, I think, for us as believers, because we're bombing women and children, trying to break the will of the German people. And yet, what else is there to do? And I can't argue that right now. Hitler seems to be in retreat. There are two bomb attempts in which Bonhoeffer and Ganani and Canaris are key actors. One of them, there's a bomb actually placed on an airplane. The fuse is set, and it doesn't go off. They think it froze. That's the best theory. In another case, a suicide bomb attempt was made. The bomb is activated. The person is escorting Hitler, and Hitler is supposed to be there for 20 minutes. The bomb's supposed to go off in 10, and suddenly Hitler changes his plans and moves, and he was famous for doing that. I've never quite figured out how they got the bomb unfused, but in any case, it was a bad situation, but it was the second attempt which occurred. I've read as there were many as 19 attempts on different on his life. So Bonhoeffer, in the meantime, befriends the guards, and he has reading material. At one point, he has an escape plan in place. It's a great plan. He's got a guard that's going to help him, bringing him workman's clothes. It's perfect. And the biggest problem was going to be how he was going to hide out after he got out. But getting out of the prison was going to be easy. It sure looked like it. And they had the clothes in there. It was all ready to go. And Bonhoeffer decides he cannot go because it would endanger too many people he loves, including his Maria and his mother and father. So he decides to stay. He continues ethics. He writes poems and stories, some fiction. Not terribly good reviews, but I've read a couple of stories, and I really liked them. You know, they were really good. And so there is a collection of those. So it's not just theological writings, kind of like Lewis. He branched out and did some fiction here. On July 20th, the well-known Stauffenberg attempt on Hitler's life occurs. A table shields the bomb. A number of people are killed, but Hitler is not. But this bomb results in a mass arrest of any and everyone that may have been a part of any plot, any suspicion. Thousands are to lose their lives as a result of the failure of the Stauffenberg bomb not killing Hitler. And information is found that Canaris, Danani, and eventually Bonhoeffer are part of the resistance and part of these plots. Fact is, he was a conspirator, and that was a very tough decision with him. He even asks some of his theological friends, is there absolution for a believer who commits murder, that assassinates someone? He struggles with this, but he decides the evil is too great. He has to act, while not knowing whether this is what a believer should or should not do. Normandy invasion, of course, is underway June 6th, as we said. The Allies sweep across France. The Russians advance in the east. And it appears that Hitler is on his last days. The Third Reich is going to fall. Then in December of 1944, what was it? Battle of the Bulge, of course. The snake still has venom. Hitler comes up with this brilliant plan. And initially, it works well because of weather. The Allied forces are unable to provide air support. And the Panzers go screaming through this bulge, Belgium. And Hitler has us back on the retreat. But the weather clears. devil doesn't have control of everything. The air advantage comes back. The Allies resume their momentum. The war is lost. But Hitler intends to take everyone that had anything, any opposition against him, with him. And so he continues his ruthless attempts to murder. Ethics.
The will of God is not a system of rules established from the outset. It is something new and different in each different situation in life. And for this reason, a man must forever re-examine what the will of God may be. The will of God may lie deeply concealed beneath a great number of possibilities.
We're so fortunate that Betke was able to hide. Some of the material was buried, actually, so that we have remnants and pieces of the wonderful way the Holy Spirit was speaking to the mind of this brilliant man, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. So, moving on to our last year, 1945. January, the Russians liberate Auschwitz, and the world learns that the often dismissed reports of the Holocaust not only are accurate, but it's far worse than anyone even imagined. In February, Dietrich Bonhoeffer is transferred, a few months earlier. See, he spent 18 months in a Tegel prison, but now he's been moved for about 4 months to the Gestapo prison, also in Berlin. And this prison, he is underground with no natural light in a 5x8 cell. 5x8 cell, that's 6 feet. It could be 2 feet from my head. I can put my arms out 5 feet. That is where he has been housed now. And he finally is moved to the Buchenwald concentration camp. And can you imagine actually being pleased to be moved to a concentration camp? Because he, along with a number of other prisoners, actually see the daylight for the first time in 4 months. I can't even imagine that. This move is done covertly, and the family loses track of where he is. And so Maria goes searching for him. There's 1,000 concentration camps. She's unable to find any information. And the Gestapo, of course, is that they have no access to information on where he is. So that is the last that Maria or the family are ever going to hear or see Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And on April 5th, Hitler gives explicit orders that any and everyone who is known or suspected of being one of the conspirators be executed. Now, with the war lost, I puzzled why the soldiers would carry out these orders. But remember, they have made oaths to do this, and their honor is in their oath. And so they do. They take Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and they transport him along a road that my grandson and I drove to Schoenberg, along with a number of other prisons, including Canaris. It's a torturous trip. Metaxas documents it well, as do others. We have bits and pieces because of people that survived. There were some British prisoners of war and others that were able to observe. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer, his pastor's heart, stood out, and so they remembered him. They stayed at a hotel in Schoenberg on April 7th. Dietrich Bonhoeffer enjoys the view after the stamp cell. And on Sunday, April 8th, he holds a worship service for the other prisoners, many of which are condemned. They know, they figured out from the route that they are on their way to Flossenbürg. And Flossenbürg is an execution camp. It's a work camp for prisoners of war, but it's also where they execute prisoners that are tried after a summary trial. On April 9th, he's summoned and taken to Flossenbürg, a work concentration camp. There's a quarry there. After a quick sham trial, he is taken naked to the gallows to be hanged. This is what a fellow prisoner writes about that morning.
On the morning of that day, I saw Pastor Bonhoeffer, before taking off his prison garb, kneeling on the floor, praying fervently to God. I was most deeply moved by the way this most lovable man prayed, so devout and certain that God heard his prayer at the place of execution. This is the end, for me, the beginning of life.
Stu said some things this morning about our role as believers, where our life is. Flossenbürg. These are also pictures that I took with my grandson. This is the spot where he was hung. There's a memorial. My first visit to a concentration camp. At one time, the university had a tour of 5 or 6 concentration camps. Oh, that would be really interesting. I'm so glad I didn't go. One is enough. One is enough. The crematorium. This is a small concentration camp. There's actually 3 crematoriums. That hole, the crematorium, is down about the same distance as here and the coffee shop. The bodies, instead of being carried down, were thrown into a shaft and tumbled down to the crematorium. I don't want to shock you, but I looked at this and my heart broke. These are the bones and ashes from mass burnings. The crematorium was not working the day that Bonhoeffer was executed. So his body was thrown on a pile. That's the pile of ashes from those who were executed at the Flossenbürg concentration camp. When we left, my grandson and I decided we couldn't talk the next 3 or 4 hours as we drove. Was a total silence. And if you know me and you know my grandson, you know that's pretty unusual. We are both talkers. Now I'm going to attempt to end today with my favorite, a poem written by Dietrich Bonhoeffer. So bear with me as I try to read this. Take a deep breath here. Who am I? They often tell me I stepped from my cell's confinement calmly, cheerfully, firmly, like a squire from his country house. Who am I? They often tell me I used to speak to my warders freely and friendly and clearly, as though it were mine to command. Who am I? They also tell me I bore the days of misfortune equably, smilingly, proudly, like one accustomed to win. Am I then really that which other men tell of? Or am I only what I myself know of myself? Restless and longing and sick, like a bird in a cage, struggling for breath, as though hands were compressing my throat, yearning for colors, for flowers, for the voices of birds, thirsting for words of kindness, for neighborliness, tossing in expectation of great events, powerlessly trembling for friends at an infinite distance, weary and empty at praying, at thinking, at making, and ready to say farewell to it all. Who am I, this or the other? Am I one person today and tomorrow another? Am I both at once? A hypocrite before others? And before myself, a contemptible, woebegone weakling? Or is something within me still like a beaten army, fleeing in disorder from victory already achieved? Who am I? They mock me, these lonely questions of mine. Whoever I am, thou knowest, O God, I am thine.